Well, thanks for taking the time here. What I thought I could do is walk you guys through the journey we've been on over the last now almost 5 years in terms of applying data analytics throughout throughout our business. You probably know Legendary, but just in case you don't, I'll flash by the titles. Recognize these. We've got Pacific Rim 2 coming out next year. Warcraft came out in June. Kong was just a few months ago. And Kong vs. Godzilla is 2020. So what we'll do is, again, that's just context. And I think that context is important because a lot of what we're trying to do from our perspective is, and we'll walk through this, but it's apply data analytics, but not just do it for small things, but with these sort of large properties, right? When I first got to Hollywood, I was not from this industry. I mean, very quickly, prior to this, I'd actually been in sports. I was doing a lot of Moneyball things. I worked with a lot of teams, mostly NFL, NBA. And came here, and a lot of things struck me very quickly as being odd, I guess, is maybe a nice way of saying it. And one of them was the four quadrants, right? You guys are probably familiar with the four quadrants, right? Which is, you know, the segmentation a lot of people talk about, male, female, over, under 25. You know, we are much more focused on microsegments, right? Being much more targeted. And the line I always use, which is if you do the math on this, the four quadrants means there's four groups of 80 million people in the United States. Our perspective is we want to go after 80 million groups of four. The other thing that struck me as odd, frankly, was the approach to media spend. Right? And so if you think about the approach to media spend in general, we started calling it the spray and pray, which is spray the population with TV ads, pray they go to the box office. And the spraying would happen at the top of that funnel, right? You would just literally just you know, spend, in some cases, inordinate amounts of money across the entire population, and it would trickle down and eventually get to box office level, right? That seems incredibly inefficient, at least it did to us. And so we wanted to take a very different approach. We wanted to go from the bottom of the funnel up, right? I always say that the goal for us was to find the person with the legendary tattoo and start from there and build up from there. And I met that person. I was awkward. But at any rate, him or someone like him is where we want to start, and we want to build our way up. And we want to build these audiences. And if we could stop at the exact moment where we knew who all the people were that were going to buy a ticket to the movie or watch it on at home or whatever, we would. We would just stop. Like, why would you spend any more money? You can't literally do that. And so we go beyond, and we have to extend sort of beyond what that actual ticket buying or home consumption audience is. But you know, where we stop is still so far short of the general population that the efficiencies we pick up are dramatic. We decided to apply data analytics to two major parts of our business, really the two that are most critical in some sense. And these words are used here very carefully and specifically. One is informing a creative process, and the other is transforming marketing. Inform is really what it's meant to be, which is an input. Right, so if you're evaluating a property for acquisition, if there's a casting decision, a release date, sort of choice, you would think that why not have a data and analytically driven input to that process? It's not the only one, it's not the primary one, but it's an important input, right? There's clear yellow lines around all that we do when it comes to the creative side, but having this, again, I think traditionally people might think of it as almost like research, right? People have conducted research for 30 years. We're just taking it and taking a different direction on it, which is using other tools and indicators, which we'll talk a little bit more about, to make those choices. On the marketing side, we're aiming to be much more aggressive, and that's where transform kicks in, right? So quite literally, can we change the way things are done? Can we take an entirely different approach? And I'll spend a lot more time talking about that. But before I do, just a real quick high level, this gives you a literal word cloud. As you know, with word clouds, the bigger the word, the more we do it. And so the most common thing we are doing with analytics is evaluating concepts. The next most common is cast evaluation. Release dates actually, just based on recent activity, is probably now bigger, but that would be the third largest thing that we spend our time on. But on the marketing side, you know, this is a somewhat clumsy, somewhat verbose description, but it really is what we're trying to do, which is what we want to be able to do is identify, understand, reach, and persuade individuals. Like, that's the goal. If we can do that, then we have a lot more precision and control in our marketing approach. A little bit about my team. So, and actually the slides are a little bit out of date. We're actually closer to 100 now. Believe it or not, we're based in Boston. We We have folks here in LA, and we have folks in Beijing. We started the group in Boston with an extension here in LA from the get-go. You know, you might wonder even why, and there's lots of reasons. I suppose the first was I didn't want to move. But you know, the more practical business-oriented reasons were that, if you think about that, well, first of all, you can see how far away it is from LA, right? You couldn't be inside the continental United States, probably be much further. And that's by design. We wanted this group to be independent in terms of their thinking, in terms of their approach, and to be agnostic to the industry at a certain level. We also had a certain talent pool that was there, right? If you think about the universities that we're tapping into and the places we draw our team from, you know, that's a pretty obvious one. And the byproduct of all that is, well, there's really three. You know, we'll come up with things that people have done before, and they're tried and true, and we just didn't know it, and we sort of reprove it or whatever, and that's great. We come up with things that completely fall on their face, right? They just don't work. That's okay. As long as the third thing, which is we find new things that haven't been done before, and those work and deliver results, as long as that ratio is good, and it has been for us, that's kind of the key, right? In Beijing, we'll talk a lot more about China, you know, sort of the back half of the presentation here, but Beijing and China in particular has been an incredible market for us. We've been able to do some really, you know, exciting, crazy, borderline creepy things. Let's skip these two slides. You don't care about those. I'll go to this, which is the approach we take. All right. And it's, I think you all would probably think of it in this way, but I'll flesh it out for you. But just to give you the context, first and foremost, it is a virtuous cycle, right? We're learning, we're improving, it's all integrated. We start with data in the upper right, make our way through analyzing that data, generate insights, actually apply it in practice, generate new data from that, bring it back around again, right? That's the virtuous cycle. So I'll walk you through a little bit about the data we've built. When I walked into Legendary, we had no data, like literally no data. I think we had like 10,000 email addresses or something. And it's not like someone was asleep at the wheel. It wasn't like someone was doing a bad job. It's just the nature of the business. We were producing a movie, like a Godzilla, and then we hand it to our partners, who are distributors, who then hand it to an exhibitor. So it's a totally natural state to be in. It's a very disadvantaged state when it comes to trying to do data analytics, but it's a natural state to kind of be in. So we had to kind of break the natural state and go to kind of towards a more unnatural state. And that unnatural state was to create a large data set. You sort of get a sense of it here. I'll just sort of maybe bottom left and counterclockwise. All kinds of data on media buying, on advertising, on box office, like that, just a huge amount of data there. We have massive data, social media. We were very into, and I'll talk a little bit more about it, but we're very into unstructured data. And unstructured data really includes everything from text to video to images. We apply a really robust set of tools against that. Our PIPA data on the digital side is pretty extreme. You know, 1.5 billion email addresses, hundreds of millions of social handles, hundreds of millions of device IDs, hundreds of millions of phone numbers, physical addresses, all that. And that kind of leads over to the last bit, which is the physical world, right? And what we're doing is we're taking all these facets of identity and we're adding attributes on top of them. I should have, on the slide a couple ago, I should have just mentioned our team's construction, just real quickly. You heard it was large, but just to give you context for it, we have about a quarter. One quarter of our team, and we're very independently operated, and so we have like your operations, your HR, that kind of stuff. But then the other three quarters are the more unique pieces. Not that the other people aren't amazing and great, it's just that the things that kind of have us do what we do. We have a data science team, over 20 people. I think we have 12 PhDs. We have astrophysicists, econometricians, statisticians, all folks like this. We have an entire development staff and team. We'll talk more about what they do in a second. They take all the data feeds we have, which are enormous and huge and voluminous, as well as build all of our interfaces, all of our APIs, do all of our data storage, everything. And then we have a delivery team that actually takes the results of the first two and drives it through our campaigns or through our activities. And as I mentioned, we analyze it, right? We analyze things, you know, to an extreme. We are using a robust set of tools. And I'll take you through a very concrete example from some movies we've done in China recently to take you through some specifics. And we built our own proprietary solution, right? Something that is we built from the ground up. We had our team devise it. And believe it or not, there's no third-party software within it. It's either open source or we've built it entirely ourselves. So once we've got the data, we've begun to analyze it, I guess the natural question is, what do we do with it? And so from a marketing perspective, the first thing we're doing is trying to build audience profiles, like literally build the people who we're going to target. And I mean that quite literally, the emails, the social handles, whatever they might be, and create a specific audience for a specific property. Once you've got that audience kind of en masse, we'll then slice it up into small pieces, right? So hundreds of microsegments. We try to find persuadable points. Our whole purpose is to understand the audience in three major buckets. One bucket we would consider to be the Gibbons. They love Kong. They're going to see Kong. They're into Kong. That's great. We don't want to spend a lot of money on them, right? They're going to find out about that movie through their own activity. They'll see it somewhere. It's fine. There's a whole group of people that we consider to be the nevers, people who are never going to go. Those people are like my mom, right? And we're cool, we're good, but she hasn't seen any of the movies that we've ever produced, ever, and that's fine. The group in the middle, that's the one that's really interesting. That's the persuadable set. If there are people who we can find and identify, where if we deliver them the right message at the right time on the right platform, can we take them from a 3 out of 5 interest to a 4 out of 5, or 2 to a 4, or 3 to a 5, like that kind of change. That's where lift comes, right? That's where the box office gets driven up. When we think about it, and again, it's kind of straightforward, but I'm sure you guys are all familiar, some of the, sometimes the emphasis here, especially on tracking, pushes you towards a certain way of thinking, but we're trying to think about it, in a more holistic, I guess, perspective. There's population, right? Within that population is some audience. That audience expands or contracts based on the property, right, and the potential. There's then the audience becomes aware. Those who are aware build some portion of them become interested, and then the key thing, which is easy to lose track of because it's so hard to measure, is conversion. Conversion is the key. Like, none of this matters. Having high awareness about a movie, having high intent, that's great. Those are the precursors and somehow an indicator of conversion, but conversion is what we all care about. That's actually what actually pays the bills. And so we do a lot to try to anticipate conversion, try to assess conversion, understand. We even call it an implied conversion rate. We're trying to gauge where a campaign might be and what the implied conversion rate would be for us in order to achieve the box office goal, and we manage to that. So it's really focused on conversion. I'll talk again more about that in the case study. The system we've built is fully integrated, right? So it integrates with APIs into all these platforms, and those are just a handful, and there's more every day. And you can see the range, right? You're talking about your Facebooks, Googles, but even your Baidus and Tencents, right? And the whole idea is to take that data that we have, that enormous amount of data, create audiences off of it, launch those audiences or shoot them down spokes to different places so that we can actually address those people with media, measure the response to the media, pull that data back, learn, get better, do it again, right? At high speed and high velocity, multiple times a week kind of thing. And then that all leads back to more data, right? So as we're doing that, we create more data, we learn more, and we pull it back through to our database. We learn more about those people, we're tagging them as we go, and then we're refining our audiences, both for the current campaign we're in and a future one. What I thought I would do is take you through a few movies that were all recently released in China and walk you through what was happening there. The reason why China is a great example for us, every territory we have ever worked in, we use the same approach, the same tactics, the same strategies, the same technologies in a lot of cases. China, though, affords us some additional opportunity, which is fantastic, and we've been able to take advantage of it. So three different movies, all of which had varying degrees of reception. You can see the differences here. The numerical values here are, I think, we're all mostly public, right? So that's not surprising. The reception is even more public, right? So we know how they were received. A couple of them, not so well. But interestingly, particularly Warcraft, that ratio of fan response, and these are just proxies, right? We have other ways we measure this. This is just an easy shorthand for reception. But in our case, for that movie, it was actually a very odd scenario where the people who saw the movie really liked it, the critics really didn't, and that was a really interesting phenomenon, to the point where that's the 98th percentile ratio of those two things together, which is very unusual. But to walk you through a little bit about the process we would go through, this is quite literally step-by-step how we approach it. We have two incredible partners in China, which are Baidu and Tencent. They are incredible for us in a lot of different ways. We've been good partners to them. They're good partners to us. They have even invested in our movies. It's been a great partnership. And that partnership enables us to have an awful lot of data and do some very unique things. The first path, the first step really in our course of a campaign is to focus on territory, right? So China is so enormous that, you know, if you don't have at least a broad geographic cut, you're going to, again, get watered down very quickly. So we'll look at the cities, and we'll, that actually you can't read it, you're not even supposed to read it, but the upper right chart is you know, each city. There's the blue or tier one, then tier two are orange, and tier three are gray. If you're above that horizontal line, we're interested. Like, that's the city that makes sense to us. If you're below that line, you don't. And the reason on this case is that it's they over-index in English language films, action, whatever, right? That's like step one. Step two is we'll take advantage of our great partnerships and use their data at scale. So the granularity of information we are able to have on individuals in China is remarkable, and it's very powerful. We can take that data and go to step three, which is actually literally train a model. So quite literally make a prediction on the people who we think are our audience and classify them into those groups I talked about earlier, the givens, the persuadables, and the nevers, right? And that gets you to step four, which is now just, let's just focus on those persuadables. Let's literally just take that persuadable audience and drive towards them. Once we've got that defined, we'll then take very small slices of those people and run many combinations of creative against them. That's that chart in the lower left and lower right, which you're also not supposed to be able to read. But the idea is, can we take these segments and can we find the creative that's going to actually make a difference to them? Once we do that, we figure that out at a small scale, then that gets you to step six. Scale it up, right? Now, kick in the spend. We've learned what we need to learn. Drive, right? And that usually happens going into the last couple weeks of a campaign. The great thing about China is that it has two major advantages for us as a team. One is that tickets are sold earlier and more digitally, right? That's like one thing. Two is that the two partners we have happen to sell about like 30% of the tickets. So between those two things, we can actually measure true conversion. We can actually say, not just, and even here in the US, even this is hard, but not just saying they saw an ad, they clicked on a link, and that link took them to a page that then filled out the, you know, the information, they put the tickets in their cart and they bought. Like, we don't have to track that whole process. We know what IDs and people we served it to, we know who actually bought the tickets later, and that's how we can measure conversion, which is really powerful. Once we've learned that, then we can get our models even more refined. And then, in fact, what we end up doing on all of our campaigns is getting narrower and narrower towards the end as opposed to wider and wider. A lot of people get wider at the end because they get panicked, they get nervous, you know, pressure's on. We try to get narrower and more focused and really try to convert those people at the end and get the highest probability of success for on an individual basis, which aggregates to success and mass. Just to give you a sense of the kind of creative, I mean, part of the reason I put this slide up is to acknowledge and to really point at the fact that it's not, you know, a singular process for us, right? We have, our creative team is incredible. The people on the ground in our team in China are amazing. They're getting big outdoor experiences. They're getting incredible, you know, sort of mall tour type activity, right? There's an incredible amount of things that are happening on the campaign, including a wide range of creative, right? So it all has to work together, all has to come together. But at the end of the day, you know, we're out reaching those people, and you can sort of see what we ended up doing. So for each of these movies, we would pick a number of people we would go after, and you can get the sense of scale here. 150 million for Warcraft, 100 million, 140 for Great Wall, a little over 100 million for Kong. What's remarkable is when we did this for the very first time a couple years ago, we could do that controlled test. We could actually literally say, this is the only place we can really do this, let's hold back people out of our audience and see what happens. Do we get a lift? If we serve you an ad and drive you towards a ticket purchase, do you actually behave differently than the people who we don't do that with, even if you're similar people? And when we designed that first experiment back then, we were very fortunate and hopeful that we would get like a 5% lift. Like, this would be great. If we can get a 5% lift on that ticket sale, that'd be amazing. It's been much more like 200% or 300%, which is remarkable. And that leads to massive ROIs. And it leads to some, I think especially sitting here, some unusual box office outcomes, like Warcraft. That movie grossed, I think ended up doing like just under 50 million here in the US. It did 220 in China. And Great Wall, I think, did just under 45 million here, did over 170 there. Kong actually was one, and it's a great movie, if you haven't seen it, totally check it out. On the, you know, on the U.S. and China, about the same. Both did about 170. Right? You can sort of see this is a real tangible, concrete application of what we're trying to do at scale. You can see the pieces that are all in play and all the things that are in the behind it, the data that we're using, the scale of the data, the precision of targeting, the analytics we're running on those audiences. It all comes to fruition. Again, we're doing it everywhere else, too, but you know, the difference here is that ability to measure the actual efficacy, which has been really powerful. With that, I don't know if we even are doing questions, but I'm happy to answer a few questions with whatever time we have remaining. So. I'll repeat it too, just so no one, in case others can't hear. I think, as I was saying earlier, the question was, do I foresee analytics and production decisions, basically, I think. And the answer is yes, but properly. Right, so any notion that analytics at this stage, maybe our grandkids will see this, but anytime soon, any notion that analytics can create a script or craft a movie or help you pick scenes or angles even or whatever, unlikely. Right, that's very hard. There's a human thing that's happening there. The creative process is very sacrosanct. But you know, as you're making these major investment decisions, just like you would bet on entrepreneurs or whatever, there's a human element to that. You still want to make sure you understand the industry that the company might be in, or the quality of their product, or their financials, right? And those things are not inconsistent with a movie. And so using data and analytics to evaluate that aspect of it, I think makes sense. From a pure creative standpoint, we're just not quite there yet. At least we're not. I don't know about you guys, but we're not.
I got a question over here.
Hi, is there a way to use technology to optimize the creative, or is that just a lot of manual back and forth and A-B testing?
So I think this creative you're referring to is the actual marketing materials, right? Sure, sure. Yeah, so we do it at scale, so it does require algorithms to suss it out. So we have very specific tools, most of which are based in and rooted in machine learning, that take the scale data that we're getting back and discern what's happening. But we purposely have someone at the switch who is making the final call. So all this gets distilled up to something that's like a dashboard that someone could actually watch and see. And that's the thing that triggers the decision making. So the machines will take the really granular data, bring it up to something consumable, and then a human being still makes a decision.
There's a question in the back.
Yeah.
So you talked about going narrower and narrower in your focus. From an analytics standpoint, for conversion process, right? So are you able to justify the cost of conversion as you focus more and more on technology? I'm assuming cost increases at that point, right?
It's interesting. So I think you all heard the question. Quite literally, especially in auction-based media buying, which would be things like social media or search, or other things like that, the more targeted you get, the higher the CPM, meaning the more you pay per person, effectively. The reality is you're targeting fewer people, which means that the actual spend is more efficiently deployed. So costs will go up on an individual basis. The total cost actually goes, maybe is flat or goes down. You actually end up being able to forward more frequency towards those people. And you know, we do try to carefully measure those ROIs. And we've been seeing things like a 4 to 7, maybe sometimes even higher ROI kind of return. And that's a great justification, to be honest.
Question over here.
How do you address influencers into the equation?
Sure. It's funny. Influencers has actually become almost, I feel like, a loaded phrase, right, or word. So if you think about influencers, we have done things where we've used athletes quite a bit, actually, partly because of my former life, partly because of our now former CEO and his connections. That's how he and I met, was through sports. And those kinds of influencers where they're looking for maybe even some compensation or they're really visible people, they can be useful, and we try to use analytics to find the ones that are the right match. We've used analytics to help us pace them and decide, okay, what days do we have them, one tweet versus another? How do they interrelate? How do they overlap?
I meant more like the social influencers.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean, too. So, like, okay. These people are, like, these athletes, these kinds of people are on social media, so we're using them on social media to promote the film. But there's a whole long tail of influencers that we care about as well. People who are not well-known, who maybe have thousands of followers or maybe 10,000 followers. And those people are influential, but maybe not definitionally influencers. And those are people we try to galvanize and turn into evangelists by feeding them materials. We had a movie once where we literally were targeting people who were in that category, the sort of influential category, by name. Like, they thought it was creepy, but we happen to, because we have all this data, we know their names. And so they were getting these direct messages to them saying, hey, we think that you're a fan, you know, check this thing out. And then, of course, that immediately creates them to repost, retweet, and like. And that's just more scale for us. That's free advertising, actually. So that's the other way in which we've used influential people.
Okay, one last question.
Have you tested this framework on more nuanced films, drama, comedy, and if so, what were the results?
We have. Horror, too. Like, horror is actually a very great, almost like niche thing for us. The results are similar. I think that leads me to what is a good sort of maybe even sort of closing type comment, which is, this is all great, right? And at the end of the day, it still comes back to the content, right? If the movie is a good movie, it's going to work better. We can accelerate it. We can help, you know, grease the skids and get it further down the tracks. If a movie, and that can be true of movies of almost any genre, right? Because we can get so precise. If the movie's challenged or difficult or not good, you can only push it so far, right? And so that's, I think, you know, the thing that is important that we always try to keep in mind, which is that there's a real symbiotic relationship between the quality of the content and what you can do with it from a targeting perspective. And so it's unfortunately, it's not a magic lever that just you pull and money falls out of the sky. It's very much about the sort of connection between the quality and the marketing. Great. I was going to say, I really appreciate everyone, the great questions and the time and attention. I'll be around for a little bit, and I'm happy to chat. So thanks so much.
Fantastic. Matt Miralda.